Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in. Josina Anderson, who covers the NFL, I believe for CBS. She was with ESPN for a number of years. Has some good sources. I don't know who her sources are here on what is really just some speculation about what might happen with Deshaun Watson's punishment. And if you're going, why are you guys talking about Deshaun Watson's punishment? Again, I'll remind people, this is highly relevant to the Texans because the longer Deshaun Watson gets suspended for, if he is suspended, theoretically, then the worse the Browns will do in 2022, and thus the better the Texans' pick will be that they got from the Browns in the 2023 draft. She says this, Seth, and I think this is important because the civil cases are not winding down anytime soon. The intent for Deshaun is to fight those, go to trial, and that could take years. And I know that there have been a lot of conjecture out there that, well, the league's going to wait until that process plays out before they hand down a punishment. This is a good point from a tweet that Josina has. She says, leak source on if the NFL issues discipline this season with civil cases unresolved referred to Antonio Brown's 8-game suspension back in 2020 for violations unrelated to Brown's pending civil dispute. An example, quote, an example of an initial ruling and a warning delivered that more could come later. And that's something that's been talked about as Deshaun has been meeting with the NFL this week. It's thought to be kind of the final step here of the investigation. Yeah. Is it the NFL may feel like they've got enough to suspend Deshaun for something, and then they could get he could get hit with more down the road after
that. The Antonio Brown one is interesting because there's some similarities in that there was a volume of incidents.
Yeah.
Now with Antonio Brown, it was harder to keep up with, I guess, in a different fashion because they were just all over the place geographically, type-wise, like everything.
Much wider variety of violations.
Yeah, I mean, he physically threatened his general manager. He had at least a couple allegations against him by women. He physically threatened a moving company dude.
Oh, yeah.
He had an altercation with cops involving his children and his ex and his baby's mother.
Threw
outside.
Furniture off of a balcony.
Yeah, like, so it was hard to keep up with and keep track of, like, even what he was being suspended for. It wasn't the sexual assault allegations at the time, but yes, they kept the door open that, hey, when you've got multiple violations, it's not necessarily just going to be a one-off, hey, we're done with this. With Deshaun, they're all related, you know, obviously, in a lot of ways, but they are separate cases, and there's a long timeline here.
Yeah.
To where, yeah, I could see where maybe the NFL thinks they've got enough to suspend him for what they know right now, and then they'll reserve the right to, if more comes out in the trials or afterwards, and then come back around and nab him again.
Yeah, there's really no rule book with any of this stuff. The NFL is, you know, they're judge and jury on this thing.
Well, yeah, no, it's funny because the NFL made a big show, I think, of making it look like, oh no, now we've got a tribunal and we've got independent other people and we'll bring in investigators and then everybody will make a judgment. But at the very end of it,
Roger Goodell
gets to do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Like it really is that.
Yes.
They've got all these processes in place to make it look like it's a much more structured and it's spread out and Goodell isn't the judge, jury, and executioner. But at the very end of the process, Goodell can basically do whatever he wants.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's, God forbid you appeal, because that's where it's going to wind up on Roger Goodell's desk.
Yeah, I think it does come down to that sometimes.
Yeah.
So like, all right, well, this is what like 7 seemingly rational people decided to punish you with. Maybe just at least we know what this is.
Yeah.
Let's leave this out of Roger's hands.
A couple more tweets I want to read to you here. Josina Anderson, again, on the Deshaun Watson situation, the punishment. Regarding the future of the situation in Cleveland, this is Josina talking. The word I keep hearing over and over again is precedent. Then she quotes this source again. the source says, you have to look at every single case that touched those areas in the personal conduct policy on sexual misconduct. That precedent is the floor or the minimum. So this source, particular source, again, we don't know who the source is, but it's an NFL source, says that they believe precedent is going to be key. Here's another one, Seth. NFL source on Trevor Bauer. Now, for real quick, for those who haven't kept up with that, Trevor Bauer, Cy Young Award winner, I believe, really good Major League Baseball pitcher, has been suspended for 2 years by Major League Baseball for an incident with a girlfriend or a female companion, however you want to couch the relationship there. So it's different than Deshaun in terms of just the sheer volume of it, although it, you know, it lives in the same ecosystem of sexual misconduct.
Yeah,
you know?
But with a more way, like a much more violent, yes. Like the description of it is, there are many similarities, there are many differences.
Right. This is what the source says. Look at what baseball did. If people don't think that's on people's radar, public opinion matters. You think the NFL wants to be the organization that says sexual misconduct against women means more to one league than the other? Think about it, end quote.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'll think about it, but I'll also think about the fact that I don't think that those two have ever really been intertwined in terms of baseball and football and trying to keep up with the Joneses when it comes to punishment. And I do think that the difference in the cases between Trevor Bauer and Deshaun Watson is that it seems like the details of the facts of the case, like as to what actually happened, are still much murkier in Deshaun's case, because it's why cases like Deshaun's are hard to prosecute in a court of law, which I'll remind everybody, none of this involving the NFL or Major League Baseball, it's not a court of law, it's different. Like, you can get suspended for stuff that's not illegal, and that happens all the time. So the fact that this involves the law, people sometimes get confused and think that the standard is higher than it is to get suspended. But like the facts of what happened are less in dispute with Trevor Bauer, I think, than it is where it's a bit more of a he said, she said, with a lot of nuance involved with Deshaun's cases, even though the volume is a lot higher.
The final tweet from Josina Anderson is from David Mulligetta. It's a quote from David Mulligetta, Deshaun's agent. We are fully confident that the facts will continue to show that Deshaun Watson did not violate any parts of the NFL's conduct policy, end quote. So
yeah.
Everything's going to be just fine, according to David Mulligetta. So we'll see. For Deshaun Watson, that is.
That was the initial strategy that really got Deshaun in trouble, was just assuming that everything was going to be just fine.
Yep.
And then his, obviously, it's on the legal side of things.
Right.
There's other stuff that led to Deshaun getting in trouble. But as far as like the legal side of things, just kind of brushing it off like, oh, this is no big deal. Why are we even wasting our time with this? That didn't turn out all that great.
No, that's how one lawsuit turned into 22 of them, pretty much.
Yeah.
Remember? Yeah, that's where we are with that. Text message 713-572-4610, talking about Altuve apologizing a couple years ago. That's become a big topic all of a sudden on the text page. I don't think it was Altuve's decision. This was done by management choice. I'm sure if you ask Altuve, he would have declined.
No, Altuve is the one that actually volunteered to go up and do it.
I love when people say, I'm sure if you asked him, he would have declined. As if they drive into work with Jose Altuve every day having conversations about this.
No,
stuff.
I mean, it's pretty well known that Altuve, the reason people asked initially, I can't remember if they asked Altuve or somebody else, like, why was Altuve one of the ones? And it was because he volunteered to do it. Like, that's where I'm telling you, Altuve deserves extreme commendation for putting himself out there when he didn't have to.
Yep.
I mean, that's leading from the front to an extreme degree and basically saying, hey, we're all in this as a team. And I think Altuve, because Altuve also probably feels some level of personal guilt that maybe he didn't do enough to stop it. You know, Hinch feels like he should have done more to stop it,
yeah,
more than just smashing the monitor or whatever he did. So I think the fact that he owned up to it, yes, is going to bring a lot of extra heat onto him. But I, like you said, Sean, I don't think he would change it. I think that's just what he felt the right thing to do was, that he was a part of it, even though he wasn't nearly as to blame, obviously, as everybody else. He was still a part of the team.
Yep. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday, 713-572-4610. All right, we got to get into this. Seth, Nick Saban took a swipe at your Aggies. I believe this was this yesterday or a couple days ago? It was earlier this week.
Son of a...
Yep. Took a swipe at your Aggies.
West Virginian trash.
This is a... Wow. This is a big topic around college football because there's a fear that the ground is moving underneath everybody right now and nobody knows what to do when it comes to the transfer portal and, more importantly, name, image, and likeness and guys' ability to make money off of it. Nick Saban says it's going to be awfully tough to keep up with the Aggies if they keep doing this. We'll let you hear from the Alabama head coach next.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, college football is getting spicy, and I don't know if it's the kind of spice that's going to be good for the game eventually, but when head coaches in schools start to get a lot of good little old-fashioned college football hate going, that's it's interesting at the very least. Nick Saban, Aggies, listen up. Nick Saban singled out your alma mater for, quote, buying its top-ranked signing class and threw a spotlight on the unintended effect of name, image, and likeness rights on recruiting during an event Wednesday night with local business leaders in Birmingham. And the Saban was sitting doing a Q&A with a couple of reporters and had this to say about recruiting and the effect that NIL has had on recruiting, specifically in the SEC.
And you've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right? We didn't buy one player. All right? But I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
All right, so here's what he means by that, is that with the name, image, and likeness stuff, it's perfectly okay under the rules for somebody who's already under scholarship at a school to go out and seek endorsement deals. They can even have an agent or a marketing rep go do that for them. What you're not allowed to do, according to the rules, and the NCAA has completely botched this thing because it's just the wild, wild west. Nobody's enforcing anything right now. What you're not supposed to do is go to high school recruits and line up a $100,000 deal or a $250,000 deal with a local car dealership if you come to, say, Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Saban's contention is that that's all A&M did with their recruit. And A&M had, like, an historic recruiting class. It was an amazing recruiting class. Saban's basically saying they bought every player on their team.
Yeah, which is it gets interesting because, like, look, so the schools have these collectives where it's groups of alumni. It's kind of like a super PAC in politics is how it sounds, is that – that they create this collective, and it's alumni that are pooling this money together, and they're going to use it to give as NIL deals to players. But that at some schools, the coaches know about it and talk about it. And I think it's kind of the Wild West right now as to like what degree of involvement those coaches should be allowed to have with these collectives. Because the team itself, the school itself, can't pay the players.
That's right.
So that's where it gets dodgy and sketchy. Is that Saban a couple times in this rant of his, in this 7-minute long rant, says that Texas A&M bought every player on their team. He says this about Jackson State, which, remember, is coached by Deion Sanders.
Hell, read about it in the paper. I mean, Jackson State paid a guy $1 million last year that was a really good Division I player to come to school. It was in the paper, and they bragged about it. Nobody did anything about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so... So, again, he says Jackson State bought this player.
Travis Hunter is the player, five-star prospect who flipped from Florida State, Deion's alma mater, to Jackson State. Not a traditional recruiting powerhouse at all.
Right. Deion Sanders responded, by the way, said, you best believe I will address that lie, Coach Saban told tomorrow. I was awakened by my son, who sent me the article saying that we paid Travis Hunter $1 million to play at Jackson State. We as a people don't have to pay our people to play with our people. Ooh, goodness.
A lot to unpack on that last part there.
Yeah, jeez.
Nick Saban basically saying Deion Sanders paid $1 million. This is, Seth, the combination of this. I mean, what Nick Saban is talking about is recruiting at the high school level. The NCAA is basically just trying to plug up a million holes in this dam right now, because there's two things at work here. Nick Saban's talking about going and recruiting high school and trying to compete in the NIL world with teams and schools that he contends are doing it illegally according to the NCAA rules. There's that. Then you have to worry about once you get guys in the door, because the transfer portal allows you to transfer once without having to sit out a year. Mm-hmm. These guys show up on campus and they're basically immediate free agents. For at least one transfer, they're immediate free agents. Look, these guys get paid a lot of money, Nick Saban and these head football coaches. I can't imagine the job has ever been more miserable for them than it is right now. Like, the actual coaching of football is pushed so much further down the list of things that they're getting to do these days that there's probably a lot of them, Nick Saban among them, that are old school, that are like, this is not what I signed up for when I became a college football coach.
Yeah, and he, he's just flat out of line in saying that the school specifically did it, saying Texas A&M bought these players or Jackson State bought these players. He's completely and totally out of line. And I also think that he does walk a fine line where he kind of, in this same rant, brags about how his players created $3 million of worth of opportunity for themselves by doing it the right way. Trying to hold himself up as some bastion of doing it the right way while also bragging about the fact that they were able to make $3 million doing it feels disingenuous to me. This is what Saban does in the offseason. He grouses about stuff. It was pace of play a few years ago. But I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to figure out the best way to exploit this better than anybody else, and he'll complain about it the whole way and the whole time. But the fact of the matter is Texas A&M just did a better job of working in the current college football environment than he did. Adapt, Nick Saban, adapt.
Spoken like a true Aggie, Seth.
Yes, the football is leaving you behind. You're becoming an afterthought rapidly.
Yeah.
These runner-up appearances don't cut it, baby.
Does Alabama not have a group of alumni that are putting together collectives and putting together NIL deals for players?
I would guess if they do, they're doing it very quietly and that Nick Saban is not involved. That seemed to be
plausible deniability.
The basic point he was making was that coaches understand what this collective money is, yeah, and are using it. That they're more involved with it than either they should be, are allowed to be, or that part I think is very hazy right now.
Yeah. Yeah, the way my alma mater is doing the collective thing, you'll love this. It's classic sanctimonious Notre Dame.
Yeah.
The collective they have, it's a really good idea if you're trying to work within the rules or the perception of what these collectives should do, is they're not using it to recruit high school players, so that's good. What they are using it for is when Notre Dame players get there, it's money that they are getting paid to go do public appearances and things like that on behalf of different charities. So there's a charitable component to where the Notre Dame player gets 50% and the charity gets the other 50%.
So he'll go. So I'm going to go It's very – that almost looks worse when, like, hey, the 19-year-old
– about? We're making the world a better place, Seth.
The 19-year-old place kicker is going off to the School for Hungry Children.
The Boys and Girls Club.
Giving them $10,000 while he collects a cool 30 Gs. Yeah.
50-50. All right.
Is that what it is? Is it 50-50?
I think it's a matching
that
thing.
That is okay.
Yeah.
That's money that might not – that's money that would have otherwise just gone completely to
Thank you.
The student-athlete himself.
Thank
and then
you.
Okay.
We're very misunderstood. We really are. Yeah. We're just trying to make the world a better place.
Honestly, Saban can complain about it all he wants. You got to adapt. You got to adapt to the current environment. Is this current environment good long-term? Probably not, but it is what the current environment is, and some schools are going to figure it out. I think Saban has figured it out to a much larger extent than he's. I mean, he's kind of wagging his finger with one hand while having his hand out with the other, because he was one of the first to brag about how much his players were making on NIL.
Yeah. No, you're right. Remember that? I said Bryce Young made $800,000 this year. He said that exact thing right after NIL, like within 2 weeks of like NIL becoming a thing. Here's the thing is there. It's the same issue they've been dealing with. Like, think about the issue the NCAA and schools have been dealing with throughout the years. It hasn't stopped it necessarily, but the issue is you can't provide inducements to high school players of any sort. Well, now it's the same rule. It's just being done with a backdrop of, oh, but once they get in the door, they can go get paid by local businesses. So I don't know. I mean, you're still dealing with the same issue. To me, the whole thing about inducing high school players or whatever, okay, then just get better at enforcing rules that you sucked at enforcing for all these many years. Like, I don't know what's really changed in that realm. To me, the bigger issue for coaches is the transfer portal and what happens with guys once they get in the door. That would be recruiting guys amidst a minefield of rules and lack of rules for inducing players is something that's been going on forever. You know, boosters and bag men and things like that, that's been happening forever. And if you choose to play that game, you play it. And if not, you choose to complain about it. That's all Saban is doing here. To me, the part that would frustrate me is you develop a player, especially at a smaller school. You develop a guy for a year or two. He turns into a good player. And now he can just up and leave and go to another school. And they can use NIL as some sort of inducement to do that. Like, having to re-recruit your team all the time would be exhausting to me.
Yeah, that would be and that is one thing. There's two sides of it. One, there's the whole, like, legal and free market and labor side of it, which is a whole ball of wax. And then there's the other side. It was just like, okay, I like college football the way it is, and I'd like it to remain as such.
Yes.
And I think you can – you can believe both things. You can believe that, yeah, people should have the right to go play or work for whoever they want to. But you can also believe that, like, I like college football the way it is. And what is the happy medium? How do you figure it out? I think it will, well, it'll ultimately kind of all shake out and stabilize. Or it won't. And everything will be segmented in a disaster. I do think that somehow it does end up, at some point, it's going to have to settle into being more what it actually has been, which is it's a minor league system for the NFL.
Yeah.
It's some of these conferences, at least. But the compensation has got to be more in line with, like, actually getting paid.
713-572-4610. We'll do headlines in the next segment. Another chance to win tickets to Scorpions between 7:45 and 8 o'clock. The darkest days for the Rockets and the Texans in the last couple of years were probably the days, within 6 days of each other, that Deshaun Watson and James Harden requested a trade. Has the luck turned in our city when it comes to the rebuild on these two teams since those 2 days? We're going to run through each of them next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. I got thinking about this, Seth, yesterday after we had the conversation about, hey, which rookie, Pena, Green, Stingley, would you buy stock in? Just in general, kind of thinking of how things have gone. And Pena is what made me think about it. I'm like, okay, well, wow, this replacement of Correa is going about as well as it could possibly go. Like, there is, whatever the best case scenario was for Jeremy Pena and the replacement of Carlos Correa, whatever that solution was going to be, this is better. Jeremy Pena has exceeded all expectations. That's nice. That's a stroke of luck that we needed to keep the Astros championship window open. And it got me thinking about the other two teams. Like, okay, the other two teams are the ones that that really need the work. You know, it's like we got three kids and one of them is in college and getting straight A's and the other two are really putting in the effort right now. But they're still bringing home D pluses and C minuses. But perhaps they're turning the corner here, the Rockets and the Texans. So Ben, run a little mood music underneath here. It got me thinking. Okay, the rock bottom days for the Texans and the Rockets, yeah, to me came within 6 days of each other. We'll get to the Rockets in a second, but I think the rock bottom for the Texans was probably the day that Deshaun Watson found out about Nick Caserio getting hired as the GM, and he went and tweeted late at night on the 6th of January, some things never change. And we hoped that it was nothing. We hoped it was just Deshaun being emo or talking about something else in the world, whatever it may be. It turns out,
yeah, somebody remember it for a little time. Somebody thought it was perhaps one of the shooting tragedies,
yes,
that had happened in that vicinity. Right, yeah. But it turned out, no, he was talking exactly about the Texans.
About the Texans. And within, yeah, a couple days, we had heard that he wanted a trade. Within 3 weeks, David Culley was hired as the head coach. And Deshaun's camp went public. Yes, he wants a trade. Okay, so that was for a Texan fan, that's rock bottom. That's as bad as it got. David Culley turned out to be a disaster as a head coach. The franchise quarterback you'd been looking for 20 years wanted out. Since then, has the luck for the Texans changed? And I know they went 4-13 this past year, so I'm not here to say, well, everything changed and now they're 10-6. But as far as, if we accept that both of these programs immediately went into rebuild mode the day that Watson and Harden both requested trades, has everything gone as right as could possibly go for a rebuild, for purposes of a rebuild? And I would submit this for the Texans, Seth. These are the things that have happened for the Texans where I feel like, okay, things are falling into place. Turns out Davis Mills can play a little bit. Drafted him in the third round. He might be your starting quarterback.
There's, I think even people that don't think Davis Mills is the answer would have to concede that, okay, that stretch, that last five-game stretch of his was pretty good.
Yeah.
And there's more upside to him. I think a lot of people that were like anti-Davis Mills have to at least concede, all right, then maybe there's something there. Maybe I think he's a backup, but I didn't before. So that's gone well. Personally, I'm impressed by the potential upside of him.
Okay.
Like the fact that I'm full bore into, yeah, we got to give him a chance here. Like, yep. I think he's shown as much as any of those other rookie first rounders in terms of showing an ability to play in the NFL.
I would take it a step further and say we learned that the whole 2021 rookie class can play. That's important, you know.
And for the Texans.
For the Texans, yeah.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about the quarterbacks still.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, for the thank you. I appreciate you pointing that out. Yes, I should have been. For the Texans 2021 rookie class. They stumbled into Lovie Smith. They didn't arrive there conventionally, but I think we feel like, hey, we've at least got a head coach. I would say this. We at least have a head coach that it seems like guys who have come in here bring up Lovie as a big reason why they chose to come here. The rookies that got drafted cite Lovie as a big reason why they're excited to be here. There are a lot of things that are being said about Lovie Smith that I don't think people would say with a straight face about David Culley in a million years.
You know, and the whole thing about all of that is there are a lot of items about Lovie that if you were to just be presented with him on paper, it would make you nervous as a fan. Okay, this is a third time retread here. Well, second time retread, but this is his third stint as an NFL head coach. People don't generally get excited about retreads. Even when they're like Bill Walsh types, people don't get excited about, Bill Parcells types. So there's that. There's the fact that, like, boy, it sure does seem like you're high in the opposite of one of your previous coaches. I'll ignore David Culley and just talk about Bill O'Brien. That's the big one. It feels like he's the opposite of Bill O'Brien in a lot of ways, in personality, in geographic origin. He's a defensive coach instead of an offensive coach. And sometimes that's not the best strategy, is to just go the opposite. And yet, because us fans have been through the ringer so much, all of those items we're willing to say, like, yeah, I could see why you'd be skeptical, but I don't care.
Right.
This feels like a normal head coach.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's probably more stumbling into a good PR move as it is, you know, him being the right football guy. The next thing, Seth, and we're going through things here that have gone right since rock bottom for the Texans. How are we feeling about the rebuild? They got the Deshaun Watson trade done. Something that a lot of people would come at us on the text page. Something a lot of experts would say, Nick needs to pull the trigger on something here. They just need to move on and get whatever they can get. He got three first-round picks and three other picks for Deshaun Watson, who held all the cards in the whole thing.
Casario was getting a lot of criticism from, you know, including from GMs, from other, you know, the anonymous executives and what have you. He was getting a lot of criticism for not having struck while the iron was hot, or taking the best deal he could earlier on in the process. And to those people's credit, I've heard a lot of people come out and say, yeah, I was dead wrong about that. Casario knew exactly what he was doing. It was still a gamble, you know. It could have blown up in his face, perhaps, because you can never predict exactly how any legal situation is going to go. But he maneuvered through that, and it worked out very, very well.
He did. And now we move on from Deshaun, and now Cleveland is having to deal with all the uncertainty surrounding Deshaun's punishment. But I can only imagine what the stress level is right now in Cleveland over this investigation possibly coming to an end here soon.
Yeah. You listened to Cleveland radio a little bit, didn't you?
I did. I did earlier this week. I listened to some of their morning show on podcast. Well, that would have been something if I listened to it live while I'm doing our morning show.
We can do that with our Odyssey station up there. We could just patch it in.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Let's listen. Well, okay, I'm glad you mentioned that, because here's the thing. I know if this were here, that if this is where we were getting to with the Deshaun Watson situation,
yeah,
that would be the A story, and we would be consumed by it, all the different angles to it. It's hard to find a ton of them talking about Deshaun Watson during the shows, and I don't know if that's because it's just burying their head in the sand on it. You really have to go through the details on their podcast to find them even talking about the situation with Deshaun.
That's exactly what happened with us. I mean, we were I know a lot of people right now, anytime we talk about Deshaun Watson, people say, I can't believe you're still talking about this. And my reaction, honestly, is still talking about it. It really got to a point where we barely talked about it at all because there was nothing to talk about and it was just a waiting game. And you also don't want to misstep and end up being the guy that either convicted somebody before they were convicted or called a victim a liar when she turned out to be telling the complete truth. You want to be very, very careful about all that stuff. And I think that's exactly where Cleveland is right now.
It's really interesting to listen. You're right. You were right about that, Seth. The other thing about listening in on Cleveland radio is that there's when they do talk about it, you can tell that there's a lot of bargaining going on, like self-bargaining going on. And it's different for them than it was for us. They are now attached to Deshaun. You know, we were covering this story, but it was about a quarterback who wanted to get the hell out of here. They just gave him 5 years, $230 million. So they're having to treat the story with the idea that, okay, this guy might be our guy. He might be a little creepy, might be a lot creepy, and he might have to be our guy for the next 5 years. Boy, how do we straddle this fence here? And it's just interesting to listen to them kind of talk through it on the air. Look, they do a great job. The morning show up there is a really good morning show. But listening to like Ken Carmen going, well, I wonder if Deshaun can maybe cut a deal with the league as if it's the feds they're working with or something like that, you know, like cut a deal. Well, what kind of deal? I don't know what they're asking him to do.
Yeah, it's a much more high profile version of the Roberto Osuna situation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. So, but point of this segment is no longer our problem. Other reasons why things may have turned the corner here. And we'll get to the Rockets after headlines. We'll do that because we're going through the Rockets and the Astros here. Trying to examine here, have we turned the corner in terms of just the luck that we are experiencing with these teams, at least in terms of the rebuild. The 2022 draft, Seth, seems to have gone very well for this team. At least perceptually, it's a draft that made a lot of sense. It attacked a lot of areas. They got some pretty good players. Did they reach on some guys compared to what the consensus was on them? Yes, they did. But at least if they're reaching on guys, they're not reaching on guys from Southwest Savannah State. Like, if you're going to reach on guys, reach on wide receivers from Alabama. If you're going to reach on guys, reach on running backs from Florida. If you're going to reach on guys, reach on offensive linemen from Texas A&M. Like, I'm cool with reaching on SEC players.
I guess my devil's advocate argument there would be like, okay, why do you have to reach for a guy who's like played in the most high-profile conference there is or was in the best possible situation there was? That would seemingly be a guy that if he was genuinely that good, that he should have been a higher draft pick than he was.
It's a fair point. I guess my counterpoint to that would be we don't know what intel they had that particular guy might be on somebody else's radar. I'll point out that two of the trades up that they made, the one to get Mechie and the one to get Christian Harris, they jumped right in front of the Baltimore Ravens. So maybe they, you know, who knows? Maybe they had some intel that the Ravens were in on Mechie or Christian Harris along the way.
If they're of like mind of the Ravens, who did get Jordan Davis before the Texans, obviously.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it's honestly, that is just a devil's advocate. Like, I'm very happy with this draft class right now.
Yeah.
These are very likable dudes for the right reasons, not because, gosh, they seem like nice guys or anything. You just keep hearing the same thing about all these guys, that they're just like football gym rats that just love the game, want to play their ass off, like care about their teammates, like all that stuff that actually matters above and beyond just being a Boy Scout or something. I think they were looking for a certain type here. Did you notice when I asked McClain about that yesterday, he completely just ignored what I had said?
A little bit, yes.
He said, that's a good point, Seth, and then said something completely different than what I had been talking about. Yeah.
Well, sorry.
John likes to do that with me. John likes to, John likes to not answer my questions at all. But pretend that he's answering them. He'll say, yes, that's a good point, Seth. Now I'm going to talk about something completely different.
I think you've settled into a comfortable spot with it.
It doesn't bother me.
It is what it is.
There you go.
It is what it is.
Go back to browsing the internet for me.
The last thing, Nick Caserio, I think, has put the Texans in a position where the salary cap is cleaned up. This is a team that's in a very, very good spot moving forward from a salary cap perspective. They're going to have over $100 million in cap space next year. They don't have any really bad contracts they're having to get out of. And, you know, maybe if Tunsil... It turns out Tunsil is just an average tackle moving forward. because they pushed a bunch of his money into the future. Maybe that becomes a contract that's a little painful to move on from at some point, but it's not anything like it was when Nick Caserio took over. It, you had Whitney's contract, and what do we do with David Johnson and some of these other deals, Randall Cobb, some of these other deals that Bill O'Brien had, Zach Cunningham, Nick Martin, that they had given out. So the salary cap looks to be pretty cleaned up. So overall, Seth, I feel like things have turned and are moving in the right direction in the Texans rebuild.
Yeah, especially
the darkest of days.
The darkest of days. Now, they've spent some money. I mean, they're not – in 2023, they're fifth, sixth for total cap space right now. They're clean. They're like normal. They're normal. They're in a genuinely good position. I always get a little bit nervous when people clear a ton of cap space because then the natural tendency is to just overspend on a bunch of people and evaporate all that cap space while also like utilizing less judgment. I think Caserio's trying to do a little bit of a slow burn with this and kind of just churn away without going to the extremes on either end.
We'll get to the Rockets after headlines. I do want to point out, you mentioned Caserio. He will join us. His next visit with us is this coming Monday at 7:30. So about this time on Monday, we will be in the midst of our monthly conversation that we have here on the show with Texans GM Nick Caserio.
You know who's not in great cap space for the next couple of years,
who?
Sean? The Cleveland Browns. Who?
No.
And that's before Deshaun's huge dead money year comes at the end of his deal, where he's got like a $55 million cap hit.
If he gets suspended next season, like not 2022, if his suspension comes in 2023, and they try to do the same thing with him then that they did for this coming year, where they just gave him a ton of bonus money so that his game checks were really, really small. If they do that again in 2023 for him, they're a mess. Like, they're a corporation where, like, you look at the books, you're like, how do we get out of this thing? Like, he's going to have cap hits of, like, $60 and $70 million each of those years.
What are we talking about? The team that traded for Deshaun Watson was potentially trading for the chance to become the 2020 Houston Texans.
Yep.
Where you had Deshaun Watson, but no draft picks and not any cap space.
Yep.
And that's what the Browns have a very, very small tightrope to walk over these next few years. They try to build a team with no draft picks around a guy who's getting paid a whole lot of money.
Indeed. All right, let's get to headlines. We're going to give away Scorpions tickets here in the next 8 minutes or so.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Start with the Astros. Couple bits of news from the Astros. First, they lose last night to the Boston Red Sox 5-1. The game started off really, really well as it could have started. Jose Altuve with a leadoff home run. In fact, Ben, why don't you cue up those two bits of audio? I should have hit you with this before headlines, but we pulled those before the show.
Early in the game, Altuve in his first at bat had a masterful at bat, soaked up 10 pitches from Pivetta. I figured Pivetta was going to go like 3-4 innings max after this. After Altuve just dismantled him,
or throw a complete game.
He had a really like so, but there was one. There was one moment in this at-bat where Pivetta threw high and inside. And I want you to listen to the crowd after this pitch.
Okay.
Up and in. Altuve has to back off the plate there as that pitch was heading close to that ear flap.
Not overwhelming applause, but definitely some jerk faces out there for sure.
A healthy smattering of appreciation for almost hitting Altuve in the head, because this is where classy baseball fans have turned into people wanting pitchers to hit the guy who didn't cheat in the head with the baseball.
Bloodthirsty criminals is what they are.
Wasn't dirty by Pivetta or anything whatsoever, but it really wasn't. But then
what happened next, Seth?
The 10th pitch of this at-bat, this is what happened.
That ball hit high in the air, pretty well to left field, all the way back, looking up. This ball's gone! Jose Altuve, in the 10th pitch of the at-bat, hits his 8th home run of the year. At his home run, number 25, leading off a game in Altuve's career, it's 1-0 Astros.
Yeah, and you thought to yourself, boy, this is just a continuation of last night when they were treating the Red Sox staff like it was batting practice.
Yeah, and I got all excited because Altuve was in the dugout doing the thing with the hand motion and stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, it's going to be one of those games where they figured something out about Pivetta and they're about to go to work on him.
Yeah.
But I think whatever it was, maybe he had something figured out, but Pivetta knew that we better clean this up. And he cleaned it up. And,
did he ever? Gave up one hit the rest of the way. He pitched the whole game.
Yeah.
He pitched the complete game. Yeah, so they lose 5-1. The Red Sox take 2 out of 3. Seth, as you said earlier, it happens. On this road trip, though, they took, what'd you say they were, 6-3 on the road trip?
Yeah.
I'm trusting your math on that they were 6-3 on the road trip. They're back home, exactly what the doctor ordered, a 4-game set against the Texas Rangers starting tonight.
Mm.
So that's good.
So, yeah, it was, but all in all, yeah, The Astros feel more like the old Astros that we know and love.
Yeah.
By old Astros, I mean, you know, from the last 7 years.
That's right.
Not from before that.
Jake Odorizzi, as it turns out, for those wondering, he, of course, went down with an apparent leg injury a couple of days ago. Game one against the Red Sox, he went down with a leg injury. He was carted off the field in very dramatic fashion. As it turns out, Jake Odorizzi, the MRI has come back and sprained and strained ligaments near the Achilles tendon. It was not the Achilles tear he feared that it was. He at first was worried that he had blown his Achilles, but it looks like he could be back sooner rather than later, Jake Odorizzi. So that's good.
How many ligaments are there near the tendon there?
31.
Things get complicated around the ankle.
Yeah.
I don't feel that much better about it that it wasn't the Achilles. Just that whenever you got sprained ankle ligaments of any sort, it's not always a straightforward recovery. Maybe it's a high ankle sprain. You're never going to get a straight answer out of the Astros. So we'll see what happens after the 15-day IL. A torn Achilles would have been out for the year, possibly more. So I'm glad that it wasn't.
It'll be good to have him back. Yep, absolutely. Next headline, Jalen Green. Despite the open campaign against him, I'm joking around. It wasn't a campaign, it was a podcast. But Bill Simmons, as we know, was not going to vote for Jalen Green for first-team All-Rookie. Fortunately, there were several other voters, enough to where Jalen Green was named first-team All-Rookie NBA yesterday. He and the other three top four picks in last year's draft, Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, Evan Mobley, Scottie Barnes, who, of course, won Rookie of the Year, they were all named to first-team All-Rookie, along with Franz Wagner of the Orlando Magic. If we recall, here was Bill Simmons on his podcast saying why he didn't vote for Jalen Green. He was a Herb Jones guy.
Our guy, Herb Jones. I mean, they can beat you.
Herb Jones is hipster Twitter favorite, for sure.
I put him on all defense.
You have him second-team forward, Bill?
I put him first-team All-Rookie.
I had him
put him over Jalen Green. Jalen Green. Hey, I don't care you're scoring 40 points. Your team's 19 and 60.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Bill.
Herb Jones was like guarding dudes in real games.
Bill, when I look back at my ballot this year,
now the Houston people are going to be mad at me. I'm sorry. I like winning players. I'm sorry. Jalen Green will get there. It's just that team was 21 and 61 this year or whatever.
All right. So that was Bill Simmons on his podcast. Jalen Green tweeted last night, Seth, after he was named first-team All-Rookie. Shout out Bill Simmons, my dog for real, with some praying hands.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Simmons replied to Jalen Green, and he said, congrats, I'm still rooting for you. Don't let the fake news aggregators ruin it for us. I just like 2022 Herb Jones more for first team, which was the whole point of the joke. Excited to see what you have in store for your second year. Good luck. So there you go.
Don't fall for the fake news. You know, quoting what I actually said.
Yeah, that's not fake news. Now,
Simmons.
Now, did it get headline porned a little bit? Like, do
yeah,
we?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's
100%.
Why I played the audio. Yeah. Like, you play the audio. There's this big Bill Simmons versus Jalen Green first team All Rookie thing that's going on, and Bill Simmons probably learned that maybe if I don't want to have to deal with all this social media fallout, I need to be a little more careful about exactly what I say on this podcast, or maybe he doesn't care
at all. Is that
what
he learned at the age of 60 after being in the media for 35 years?
It's what I would have not learned in the process. But I think if you listen to the audio, you know he wasn't like angry about Jalen Green or he hates Jalen Green. He's having a conversation with a couple of his buddies. Was it unprofessional? I don't know. Maybe. Bill this is Simmons the world we live in now.
Bill Simmons gets very upset for media people doing exactly what he's done his entire career. He doesn't like when he becomes the subject. He's said this before. We're like, don't take, just because we say something on a podcast, don't make a big news item out of it. Get over yourself, buddy. This is what you want. And this is what you've done. You've had bad takes forever based on specious information and thrown it out there. You dress it up like it's some kind of intellectual philosophy because you talk about it with Malcolm Gladwell. But now when the tables are turned on you, it's a crime of all crimes. Let it go. Herb Jones did get
second team. Herb Jones did get second team. Why are we playing Scorpions right now? Why
is that
not?
Bill Simmons music?
I bet he likes Scorpions. He's a music? Child of the 80s like me. I bet he likes Scorpions. 713-572-4610. Sorry, I'm just going through my head. I'm like, do I think Bill Simmons likes Scorpions? And I thought, if I Googled hard enough, I bet Bill Simmons probably at one point when he was writing for Page 2 on ESPN, probably wrote a 6,000-word essay on why Larry Bird is the Scorpions of the 80s NBA. Like that, those are the type of columns he used to write, which is why I really enjoyed him as a writer. That's my kind of stuff. 713-572-4610. Caller number 5 is going to the Toyota Center on September the 17th to see Scorpions. Your last chance to win comes this time tomorrow. All right, so Jalen Green, first-team All-Rookie. Golden State blew out Dallas last night in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. So the two teams that had to win Game 7s to get into the Conference Finals both get blown out in Game 1 of the Conference Finals. So the Eastern Conference Finals continue tonight with Boston taking on Miami, trying to even that series at 1. By the way, you're listening to...
There's one thing I know about basketball, Sean. The best thing about the basketball playoffs is that after any playoff blowout, it does genuinely feel like that team could never, ever possibly win the series. I can't believe these people would even entertain the notion that they could win.
And I like that people think that because that is why I will back both underdogs plus the points the next two nights.
Oh, no, I fall for it every time.
Yeah.
Every single damn time. Once you're up 2-0 in a playoff series, it feels like the thought that... In basketball specifically, more so than any other sport, the thought that the other team could ever come back feels like the most distant and possible notion ever.
Yep.
Why would you even talk about this? What are you, a clown? Do you not understand basketball? Right. Come on, get with it.
And especially that sport where so much of it is just the witchcraft of the three-point shot going in or not. You know what I mean? Is it falling tonight? Is it not falling tonight? You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. We just got done talking a couple segments ago about Nick Saban's comments about Texas A&M saying they bought their recruiting class. Ryan Day, and I sat here and said, these poor college coaches having to re-recruit guys. And then I read stories like this, and I'm like, okay. I mean, maybe not that poor of college coaches. Ryan Day, head coach at Ohio State. I guess if you get a raise from $7.6 million annually to $9.5 million annually, then you can be asked to do things like re-recruit a few guys who might be getting NIL offers from other schools. Ryan Day and Ohio State agree to a two-year contract extension through the 2028 season. So Day, who is well thought of at the NFL level, he is somebody whose name comes up each hiring cycle as a possibility, sort of a wild card possibility. Now, Urban Meyer might have poisoned the water for Ryan Day, Seth. NFL teams may look around and go, the last time an Ohio State head coach got hired in the NFL, he wound up playing grab ass with some co-ed at his restaurant in Columbus on the bye week.
Well, I wonder.
Even worse, not on the bye week, on the Thursday game week, and he didn't go home with the team. He stayed in Ohio.
You know. I think that some of it depends on just the background search and the kind of asking around about the guy. Like, will Urban Meyer poison the well for future college coaches going to the NFL? I think what'll happen is that owners will realize, okay, just because a guy is advertised as being some workaholic, football genius or something, there's a difference between the PR and what the guy actually does, and we better look into that. Like, if I look at a guy like Luke Fickell, the Cincinnati head coach,
yep.
I'd be real surprised if he's anything like Urban Meyer. Like, and I think if he got a if somebody wanted to give a look at him as an NFL head coach, they'd dig into it and they'd talk to coach and they'd figure out exactly what is he like on the recruiting trail and all of that. And is he kind of cut from that NFL? He's the first guy that popped into my head.
Sure.
I don't think he has. I wouldn't go with him because I don't think he has any NFL experience or anything. I don't think he's poisoned the well. I think he's just going to make owners be a little bit more careful.
Yep. Next headline. We talked about Patrick Beverley yesterday and all the comments he had about Chris Paul earlier this week and about James Harden. Called Chris Paul a cone, basically meaning that he can't defend anymore. A lot of people coming out of the woodwork against Patrick Beverley, which when you're a heel is probably your goal. By the way, congrats to Bob and Seeley and Joseph in Richmond for winning the Scorpions tickets. Congrats to both of you guys. Have fun at the concert. Couple people calling out Pat Bev yesterday. I don't know if Pat Bev cares about this or not. One of them was Danny Green, former NBA champion with the San Antonio Spurs, of late with the Philadelphia 76ers. Here was Danny Green on a podcast yesterday talking about Patrick Beverley.
Bro, people target you too, Pat Bev. You ain't playing no defense out there. You ain't stopping Luka. This time and time again, I see Luka call your ass little man. He's too small and go right at you every chance he got. You're a cone. When you play Luka, you're a cone too. How would you like that?
Yeah.
Is this recording? Is this recording?
It's recording. It's still recording.
Put it out there. Yeah, put that out there. I'll say it twice. Out of here.
Boy, all this NBA beef, and it's all caused by Patrick Beverley. If his goal was to get a TV career, he's playing this masterfully right now. Dick Vitale, who could be Patrick Beverley's future co-worker at ESPN, who knows? He tweeted about this yesterday. Congrats to Matt Barnes and Dame Lillard for getting on Beverley for his absurd rip job of CP3. He sounded jealous, and he hasn't been half the player Paul is. He received more PR for his anti-CP take than he ever got as a player. And then Vitale retweets himself. Dick Vitale, friend of the show, by the way. He retweets himself and says, "What did Patrick Beverley gain by attacking the future Hall of Famer CP3 other than some PR? It was so second class and what happens in second and third grade." And I would say and I didn't retweet it or reply to Dick and say this because I'm, you know, just trying to be respectful. But as I read that, kind of the same thing that I said to Ron the Show Hughley, who I guess I was less respectful to. I said it respectfully, Show. You know this if you're listening. But when Dick Vitale says, "Seth, what did Patrick Beverley gain by attacking future Hall of Famer other than some PR?" He might have gained a TV career out of it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen a player recently single-handedly have so many people go, "Well, there's his sizzle reel for TV one day through the ESPN car wash."
Yeah, I guess saying other than PR when you're in the business of being very public. Yeah, like other than PR, other than notoriety, other than Q rating, whatever it might be, like that's the entire business you're in.
Right. Dick Vitale, like Dick is all about the sizzle.
Now, what I would say though, and where I agree with Dick Vitale is, like, let's not pretend like Pat Beverley needed to have some big moment to get an opportunity in media or something. It's not like Pat Beverley couldn't have gotten some opportunities to try broadcasting along the way. So I hesitate to say, like, "Oh, this is exactly what you needed to do." Because there is something to, I like, just randomly going out and, like, viciously attacking Chris Paul. It felt like it was over the top.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if this were Chris Paul, and this was your opinion when Chris Paul was 27 years old, then so be it. Maybe then it would be a really bad opinion. But at least then you're attacking a guy who's in the prime of his career. Yeah, Chris Paul is in his mid-30s and isn't going to be the same guy he once was. But let's not act like you're the truth teller because you're going so extreme with it on a Hall of Fame player. That part of it I felt like is becoming a little bit of just you're like making yourself into a little bit of a circus show more so than an actual commentator.
That's fair. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday.
Sean, it would be like if, like, Bruce Matthews, one of the best offensive linemen of all time, if, like, in his final season I were to come out and say something about, like, this is what Bruce Matthews can't do. Like, look at him. He's just not nearly this or that. And, like, people would be like, yeah, he's 39 years old. Like, literally, I think Bruce Payton Dillard is 40.
Yeah.
He's 40 years old, Seth. It would have been a low-class move to do something like that.
Would,
so that was what Beverly did in that instance with Chris Paul. It was a low-class move.
Would have been low-class, but you'd be on TV right now.
I'd be on TV.
I'm glad you didn't do that. I like doing the show with you.
But that's where I wonder, is Beverly going to actually make that his shtick when he becomes a commentator? You know, it's one thing to be like the truth teller. It's another to be like over the top. Like, I'm just going to go after people.
Yeah.
For the hell of
yeah.
It,
yeah. I'm going to tell you right. What's more entertaining? Going after people. Like, if he wants to make it personal, that's what made it entertaining to me.
You know what? I'm going to blame this on, like, so many problems in America right now.
Yeah.
The show, Ted Lasso.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because in that show, what's Roy's last name?
Roy Kent, I think.
Roy Kent, whoever he is, he becomes the commentator, and he uses profanity and stuff.
Great.
And everybody loves him for it. Yeah.
Roy
I think
Kent.
I blame Ted Lasso for David Culley being hired. I blame Ted Lasso for I see a lot of things happening in sports right now where I'm like, damn it, somebody binged Ted Lasso, and now they're going to go the revolutionary route of trying something to happen on this television comedy.
If you don't know what Seth is talking about with Ted Lasso and David Culley, then go watch Ted Lasso. That's all I can tell you. Go watch Ted Lasso.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.